Good evening and welcome back to the Journey Home program. I'm your host, John Mark Grodi, here on EWTN. And once again, we have this great privilege to come together to hear a story. We're joined by Monica Anyango. She's a revert of the Catholic faith, and she's also the creator of the Life of Purpose Planner, the website of which is simplicityandproductivity.com. We're going to talk a little bit more about that later, but she's here with us tonight to share her journey of faith, how she returned home to the Catholic faith. And so, Monica, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited to dig more into your testimony. I've already heard a little bit of it, and I'm excited to hear about the planner and the work that you do now. A lot of really wonderful stuff to share tonight. So
thank you. I'm excited.
Yeah. Well, I'll get out of the way. Take us back to the beginning. Where were you born? Talk about your family. How did this journey begin?
So my name's Monica Anyango. I was born in Uganda, though I was raised in Kenya. I was born in a Catholic family. My mom was very religious. In terms of formation, I just remember, I think probably 7 or 8 years old, we lived in Kenya as refugees. Okay. And we had to go through catechism for the first Holy Communion. So I just remember those moments of us running around and getting the formation. That one thing that I remember so much from that experience is that if you haven't gone to confession in such a long time, that don't go and receive Holy Communion. And if there's anything that I have taken through my life, is remembering that. Don't go to and receive Holy Communion if you haven't been to confession. So that is one thing that I remember from that experience. We moved back. There was war in my country in Uganda, and that's why we're living in Kenya. But eventually we went back to Uganda and we went to boarding schools. Mm-hmm. However, in my primary school, we were in a Catholic school run by nuns. And I remember the main thing was that we had morning prayer, evening prayer, and we go to Mass on Sundays, and we prayed for the meals, and the nuns were educators. So that's the main thing that I remember. We would say Hail Marys and go through our day, and and the focus was on education. For my high school, I went to a Protestant school, which is non-Catholic, and so there wasn't faith there. There was, I would say, kind of like evangelical faith. So in Uganda, there's mainly Muslim. At that time, there was mainly Muslim, Protestant, and Catholic. Gotcha. It's not like now there's so many mushrooming evangelical groups. So you were either one of those. Right. So the population was kind of split in between that. So that's how we ended up in that school. So I actually had a conversion. So they invited us to... there was an altar call, and I accepted Christ at that moment. I was actually also in the choir at in my school, and then I backslid. I don't know if that term makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had a moment I backslid, and then the brothers and the sisters in the group, like, what happened? So anyway, so after I left and I went to college, but the college wasn't Catholic, so I was basically being raised in the world. Eventually, I came to America, and being in America and not having a very strong foundation of faith, I kind of got lost. And so I always had a beautiful memory of what being Catholic was. Mm-hmm. And so I would pick and choose what I wanted to do in my Catholic faith. So whatever I wanted, I would go to Mass sometimes, not go to Mass. And basically, I just got lost in the world.
Now, how did that come about? And what was the time period that you came to the States?
So it's been, that was in 2003. So okay. I've been here about 20 years.
Okay.
Was it for
school or education?
Yes.
Or?
Okay. So it was for education. Okay. That's why I came. But in that process, I kind of completely lost the faith, because there wasn't a strong foundation in terms of maybe formation or exposure. Mm-hmm. I didn't have an understanding of what the faith was. I kind of liked the Catholic faith as a label, so to speak. So I identified myself as Catholic, but not really Catholic at heart. So sometimes I go to Mass, sometimes I don't. It didn't really inform my life. So that's kind of my experience of faith. Okay. So I went through the life, like maybe 10, 12, 15 years or so. And then in that process, I had my daughter. Okay. I had my daughter outside the church. And in that moment, I started asking the big questions. So I think it was after 6 months after she was born, I was asking the big questions. I would pick her up, and she looked like a little you know, in the first few months when the baby's born, they're not very interactive, and you just pick her up and put her down. And I was like, this is such a senseless and aimless life if we're just born to feed and put the babies down. You know, like the baby doesn't talk to us, they don't say anything. This must be such a hopeless existence. And so I would be like, why are we living if we're just going to decay and there's no meaning to life? So there was one moment I think God completely took himself away from me. And I remember just feeling like, probably I'll call it the dark night of the soul, but I'm not sure. I just felt like I was being sucked into a deep vacuum. And now looking back, I think it made me realize that God holds everything in existence. And if he is to remove himself, even for a single moment, we cannot exist on our own. And I think that's kind of what the world tells, you know, sometimes when we are doing all these things, we feel like we are controlling life, but everything is sustained because of God.
Yeah. Sometimes it's a great gift, right? When God allows us to experience his absence, because it makes us ask big questions like you were being asked.
Right, yeah. So I was asking the big questions, but he removed himself completely. And I was, I think, hanging in limbo. And I was just like, if there's somebody out there, please show me a sign that you exist. And the next morning, I woke up, and it was Good Friday in Uganda. And everybody was sending me messages and videos, and they were saying that I think that there was an apparition, that it was Good Friday, and they were making a procession, like on the way of the cross, and a big form of a Eucharist came spinning in the clouds, and forms of Jesus and Mary appeared. So, and then people were giving their testimonies, and they said, you know, I don't care what you say, this is what I believe. So a lot of people were sending me that message, and it was the night. Uganda is 12 hours ahead. And it was that very night when I stood in my door and I said, if there's somebody out there, please show me a sign that you exist. And that was the proof that I needed. I do realize everybody has a way that they are sent to God. Yeah. I think in my case, I needed a supernatural proof of God's existence. And that is what gave me the reason to believe. And it was right almost at the same time that I had stood in the door in my subconscious asking, show me a sign.
Right.
So when I woke up, that's when I got the messages telling me of that apparition. I don't think it's been confirmed by the church, but you know, they say you can, there are certain things, if they help you grow in faith, then you're okay to.
It came at a providential moment.
Yeah, exactly at the time that I asked the question.
Now, leading up to this point, I mean, so where were you living, and were you working up to this point? Or?
So at that time, I was living in Los Angeles. Okay. I went to nursing school. I was working in the emergency room at a trauma hospital, one of the biggest trauma hospitals in Los Angeles. And so I had had my daughter, so I was home for about 6 months. And so I was living in Los Angeles like everybody else, hiking and, you know, going to the beach and doing all those things that people do in Los Angeles. And, you know, having my daughter, I had my daughter outside the church.
Yeah.
So I was immersed, and I was right in the middle of Hollywood. I tell people it's kind of ironic. I came from Africa. I didn't find God in Africa, and I found God in the middle of Los Angeles, you know.
Right.
So it's kind of the irony of how God, you know, can redeem us from everywhere.
Well, there's also the irony, too, of the questions that you had begun to ask, prompted by you know, having your daughter and asking these questions, the experience, you know, the question of, you know, what is the purpose of life? You know, where's happiness? In some sense, you know, looking at your story there, I mean, you're in California, there's lights and cameras and it's beautiful. And you mentioned the beach and, you know, and yet so many people are unhappy. And it seems like that was what you were experiencing. Like, what is the meaning of life? Where is this going? Why are we here?
Right. Yeah, because it was just like looking at my daughter, it didn't really make sense, you know, because she's not talking to me. But even then, even after my conversion, I stayed home for about 2 years, and then I went back into the ER. And I think looking back, I think the Lord was using that time. I was looking for a spiritual director because I couldn't understand what was going on in my life. I felt two different things pulling me. I felt like I was being called to be a cloistered nun, and then I was called to live a Franciscan life. And I wasn't sure what was happening with my interior, and I couldn't find a spiritual director because I just had this interior anxiety and I needed answers, but I couldn't find those answers. So I was going around asking, calling different places. Do you know of a spiritual director? Actually, funny, I tried even calling Father Spitzer's office, asking if he's doing any spiritual direction because it's somebody I'd seen on TV. And I was like, maybe he'll understand what's going on and he can give me some explanations of what I'm feeling, like the disturbance in my soul. But when I went back to the ER after 2 years being with my daughter, and I think in that phase, the Lord was using it to form me about, you know, faith and all that, because I was reading ferociously. Mm-hmm. So in terms of my conversion, at that moment when I said, is there God? And he showed me the sign. I didn't even have a Bible in my house. And I had one book, The Purpose-Driven Life by Rick Warren.
Yeah.
And somebody had said, oh my goodness, this book is amazing. So I had that book in my place. And that was the only faith-based book. So I picked up the book and started reading it. And when I was reading the book, I was trying to understand why we exist. So that's maybe a day or two after the incident. Mm-hmm. And he was kind of telling a story about why we exist, but I couldn't understand. But the only thing that I could take from that book, he said, we are born to know, to love, and to serve God. And I'm like, okay, if there's anything I'll take out of the book, will be that.
Yeah.
So that's all that book planted in my heart, is that we are born to know, to love, and to serve God. So nobody ever told me anything. And there was a friend who was like, oh, Monica, thank you. Blessed be God, you found Jesus. Come to my church. Come to my evangelical church. I have connections and I'll take you to the church. And I said, you know what? This found me in being Catholic. I was going to mass sometimes, but I'd never even gone to confession. Even a friend asked me like, oh, Monica, I've seen you come to church, but I never see you receive Holy Communion. I'm like, am I supposed to be receiving Holy Communion? What is that? And I would sit in mass. I loved going to mass because they had like contemporary music and all that. But I'd never really had that, I guess I would call it like an altar call to come to confession or come to receive Holy Communion. Compared to the parish that I go to now, like there's confession lines in the middle of mass. And when you go, you're like, oh, what's happening? It's like, oh, confession line. So I'd never, for years, I went to the parish for 5 or so years, but I never received Holy Communion. I never went into confession. I never even knew how to do it, or I didn't have an understanding of the need to do it.
Right.
But I loved going to mass. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I was trying to go every Sunday. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it was God's grace at that moment. I don't know. But it was God's grace protecting me from receiving Holy Communion, not being in a state of grace. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that happened, because I was like, oh, my goodness, I could have been receiving Holy Communion in a sacrilegious way at that time. So, but it was God's grace. I still loved going to mass, but I sat in the pews and I never received Holy Communion because I just didn't understand.
Right.
My friend said, oh, come, I'll show you an evangelical church. And, you know, the pastor is great and the music is great. But I was like, no, because I'd already tried bouncing around with different mega churches when I was still seeking. But it's just each time I would go, there was just something missing. And it just felt like a production. And I would miss the incense and the smells and the lights. So I think I remembered from my childhood, even in Africa, in Kenya, Uganda, we would have beautiful esters with the lights and the incense and all these different things going on. So what always kept me in the church, or the image that I had of the church, is the beauty. Mm-hmm. I would just remember Easter, coming to Easter Vigil or Christmas Midnight Mass, and the music and the lights and the incense. And it was just, it always warmed my heart. So I think that's why I kept on always going back to the Catholic Church, even though I was bouncing to different mega churches and just not feeling. I was like, it's just something wasn't connecting.
Right.
But in that moment, coming back to the Catholic Church, God in his grace protected me from not receiving Holy Communion at that time. So when my friend said, oh, come, I'll show you a church, I was like, no, whatever happened found me here, so I'll start looking here. So I started looking, doing my own study, because I needed to prove where the true church is. I started asking, like, if there's a true church, why are there a million churches? So I started researching from a historical perspective where the church is. And I was listening to also a mega pastor on YouTube, and he seemed to say a lot of things that made sense according to my understanding then. But one thing that really struck at my heart, he said, oh, the Catholics are stuck in Rome worshiping dead saints. And that really stabbed at my heart, even though I didn't have an understanding of it. And so I stopped listening to that pastor. And one of the things, somebody had introduced me to Bishop Barron. And I was like, oh, he's so high theological, and I couldn't understand what he was saying. But one thing, there was a video, he talked about the Holy Spirit. And when he talked about the Holy Spirit, it kind of validated what I was feeling in terms of like the gifts of the Holy Spirit or the transformation. I think he said it was the gifts of the Holy Spirit or how to know you have the Holy Spirit. And I was like, oh my goodness, this seems like something that I'm experiencing. Mm. So, and that's one of the ways that I validated the church. So historically looking, like there's only been one church for 1500 years. There was only one church until after the 1500 that other churches came into existence. And we're in Rome recently and seeing even one of the oldest centers of Christian worship is a Catholic church, and also seeing the burial ground of Saint Peter in Saint Peter's Basilica, and looking at the Catholic Church owns or is the custodian of all these historical pieces of the Christian faith. So all these things, putting them together, and also just looking at like what Bishop Barron, I think he helped me understand the theological side of the faith, and then looking at the history.
History is such an important piece. I was going to say that, you know, that you can't, Christianity is a faith that you can't be separated from the historical question.
Right,
because the claim is Christ was a real person and he really did X, Y, and Z at a particular place at a particular time. And so when the question of today being a Christian, there's got to be an answer to the question of, oh, how do we get from there to here?
Right.
You know, that can't be an irrelevant question because it was a historical event. And so I have to know what happened between then and now. And so exploring that question is such an important piece of the journey for so many people.
Right, yeah. So I had to read a lot because I wanted to know. So I got very interested in the Old Testament and also looking at the Jewish culture. Yeah. So actually one of my favorite is the old part of the Old Testament, because it explains why Catholicism is what it is, the way it is. You know, the priesthood, you read about the Levites, the priesthood of Levi.
Right.
Yeah, and you read that and you see talking about the ark and this is what you do and the temple worship and, and the rubrics and how it was structured and the priests wore certain garments and, you know, the lay people wouldn't touch the garments because they were set apart. And only, so looking at all this imagery, and it was so beautiful just diving into that text and understanding like, wow, the Catholic Church is so rich. And this is where it comes from, and looking how it's coming to fruition and how it has continued. So it was very beautiful learning that that side of the faith, you know, with the help of Brant Petrie
and
Scott Hahn as well, and seeing those stories and looking at the biblical side of things and the history was very beautiful getting to understand that.
It seems a key piece of all that, too, that connects a little bit with your experience of asking God and kind of receiving a sign and also kind of feeling this draw to stay home in the Catholic Church, is that, again, throughout the Old Testament, throughout the Scripture, part of what's going on is we have people grasping for God, but God gives himself to his people.
Right.
He shows them how to worship. He gives his son. And so, you know, that comes to fulfillment in a faith that we receive from God, how to worship, how to approach him. Sacraments aren't something that we do.
Right, right.
Something that God does.
Right.
And that's a key piece there.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what the Old Testament really helped me understand why God had. And it's like he didn't do those things because he wants to be pleased. It's because it's the right way to worship him. Mm-hmm. In worshiping him the right way, we find fulfillment in doing that. So it's not, we can't make up these things. We are not God, you know, and God is the one who's telling us your path to happiness is through worship. And this is how you need to worship. There has to be a sacrifice. There has to be this and this. Yeah. And this is how the rubrics is. So all this came together and I was like, wow, how beautiful to really see and see that the Catholic Church has preserved that. And so I also started reading a lot of like mystical texts as well, and truly understanding. And I think one of the texts was talking about like, I think it was Catherine of Siena, and it was talking about like, it was another mystic, and it was saying like, there's only one church who has preserved my truth, and she's the one that hasn't adulterated my faith. And it's and there's a priesthood. So I started thinking like, what is that place that has a priesthood? And what is that place that hasn't adulterated the faith? And I started thinking about contraception and all of that. And I was like, oh, the Catholic Church is the only one that has maintained the truth of that. There hasn't been a change in terms of what the church teaches about contraception, about the sanctity of marriage, and all these different things. So I was like, oh, wow, this is the only place that has preserved all this truth. So that is the one true bride of Christ. Mm-hmm. So I was getting the evidence from the historical side of things, but also from the mystical side of things, and also looking at what those pointers are. And also even one of the things, I was looking at the existence of miracles. And I was like, I would look at the saints, you'd hear about the dead saints or the statement that the pastor made, but looking like the Catholic Church is the only one with incorrupt yeah. bodies and all this different evidence of miraculous things happening. There's yeah. no church that can truly say that it has proof of these things. And I'm like, why is it, if those churches are true, don't they have those things mm-hmm. existing? So that was also one of the ways that I validated the church. So the history, the mystical aspect of things, and the preservation yeah. of the truth of God. Because if you truly understand what marriage is, why it should be preserved, then it's like it makes sense that it's ordained by God and why it should stay that way. So looking at all these yeah. different things, and also the evidence of miracles existing, like no other church can prove that. Yeah, mm-hmm. I've seen at a mega evangelical events, they mm-hmm. do seem like something is happening, but I haven't seen an incorrupt body.
Well, and the church takes them so seriously. That's, you know, you're laying out some of these various topics. You know, as you begin to explore the Catholic Church on her terms, read what the church says about herself, read about how the church handles miracles, what many people are surprised to discover is the church is all about truth and reality. It takes it very seriously. And so while the church has, miracles that it has affirmed, and saints and uncorruptible and different things like that, if you explore how the church treats these things, it takes them very seriously. It's extremely cautious. It is very patient. It takes its time because the church is so careful. It sees itself as the guardian of these things. It's not innovating new things. It's not making things up. It is guarding the deposit of faith.
Right.
So the church is actually extremely conservative in that sense of being very careful. It's not leaping to conclusions. It's carefully preserving these things.
Yeah. And those are the things that really kept me in the church, like looking at all this evidence. And I said, like, from a theological perspective, like listening to Bishop Barron, he's so philosophical and theological. And if you engage your intellect and your reason, it's like, this does make sense,
yeah.
you know, and I was experiencing the things that he was saying. So on those four different levels, from the historical historicity of the church, looking at the evidence of miracles, looking at the preservation of truth, and also looking at the theology and the philosophy. And one thing, like, I kept on asking my mom, like, in Uganda, my mom is in Uganda, and she's still very, they call them staunch Catholics. I asked her one time, like, I would keep call her and ask her, what is this? What is this? And she's like, I'm so tired of you asking me all these questions all the time. Why don't you go look at the catechism? And I went into the catechism. Everything that had been revealed to me was right in there. Everything. Like, I was like, whoa. And so that was one way that I proved the church, because I was like, everything that I had come to my, like, personal revelation mm-hmm. and for my own investigation was actually in there, because I was doing the work of finding the truth.
Right.
I was investigating what the church, which church teaches the truth.
Yeah.
So that was kind of also another way through the catechism of the Catholic Church, proving the truth of what the church teaches. Because nobody told me, even I remember a moment, nobody told me about confession. Mm-hmm. I woke up one day and I just gave the baby, my mom was visiting at that time, I gave the baby to my mom, and I just started crying and walking down to the church, and I was bawling, like, I walked like a mile on the street crying, and I didn't care if anybody was looking at me. And I went to the confessional and I was crying, and the priest is like, I was sobbing heavily, and the priest was like, are you okay? Because I was in the confessional crying, and this was my main confession that I hadn't done, like, maybe in 20 years or so.
Oh, wow.
And the priest was, he's like, are you okay? Like, what happened? How did you come to this situation? I was like, I don't know. I just showed up and I'm just sobbing and sobbing. He's like, are you okay? Do you need anything? I'm like, no, I'm just here for confession. So he was kind of like what pushed you to the edge to come? And nobody told me about confession. And I do remember the day I went to confession, I would be driving, like, going and doing something, and then I would understand, like, there's a lot of anti-Mary theology out there, especially like in Uganda, and if you don't have a strong faith, you're going to be shaken, and you'll think like the Catholic Church is the whole Babylon and Mary and all these different things. And I was like, whoa, Mary is actually the woman, the serpent, and you know, she's her foot is on the snake's head, mm-hmm. you know, the serpent's head. And it made sense. Nobody told me. Mm. It just came into my understanding. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is why, like, you know, there's that anti-Mary information, because it's, if you know the power that she has in terms of drawing you to God and drawing into a deeper relationship with Jesus, you would know that that's the key, because you can't love God without loving her mother. Mm. You know, we all love our mother. So how can we decapitate her mother, the mother, from yeah. God? And so just going to confession alone broke that chain yeah. for me to begin. And I'll be driving and just things would make sense. Like everything, I'm like, oh, Saint Joseph is this, mm-hmm. and this is this. And it just made everything just started coming together. And that's the power of confession.
Yeah. It also, again, it reminds me again of the historical piece again, just that, like, part of, again, the reason that the history is so important to the Catholic Church is that God, by his own choice, right, chose to enter into history and to be born and to work through Mary's yes and to work through and to work through his saints. Right? He doesn't have to do it. A lot of times people are suspicious of that kind of stuff because yeah. Only God can do this kind of stuff. But God chooses to work through our prayers. He chooses to work through Mary. He chooses to work through Saint Joseph. He chooses to work through sacraments, through stuff.
Right.
Right. And so that, again, if we're people of truth, we ask that question and we accept, God, this is the way you choose to work, then I'm here for it, right?
Right. And yeah. I think there's a lot of humility in that as
yes.
well. Because even knowing, like, who am I to question God?
Yeah.
He's God and I am not. If he would choose Mary and feel like she's worthy enough to be the mother of God, then who am I to say no to that?
Mm-hmm.
And she's our mother. Mm-hmm. Why shouldn't I honor her as a mother? Or even the saints, especially now with my work on simplicity.
Yeah.
I like to refer to the saints a lot. Like, even now, there's the movie Mother Cabrini that
right.
is out.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows her self-gifting in that. And those were the true friends of God, now realizing our life is about self-sacrifice and self-gifting.
Yeah.
And it's like they truly gave everything for the love of God. And I'm like, if they were the true friends of God, and Jesus says in the gospel that the disciples were asking, why do you speak to us in plain language and you speak to them in a different, you know, in parables? It's like, rejoice because the truths of God have been revealed to you. I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah.
But knowing that those were the true friends of, and they proved, they said, do not tell me how you love, show me.
Mm.
And you look at Maximilian Kolbe,
yeah.
All these people, the saints and the martyrs who have laid their life down for the faith, that is how they proved their love for God.
Yeah.
So who am I to question that?
Yeah.
So and in understanding, like, teach me how to love the way you loved,
yeah.
you know, because ultimately our faith should transform us to be people of love.
Mm-hmm.
And the saints are the people who truly loved. So when we are praying and asking for the intercession, is show me how you did it. Because
right.
at the end, as we're going to talk about virtue and all
yeah.
of that, the battle is our interior. You know, we are fighting over ourselves. And it's like, how did they do it? How
yeah.
did they overcome themselves to surrender and abandon themselves to God completely?
Yeah.
So teach me how, like Teresa of Lisieux, teach me your little way of how to love even the most difficult times. Or Teresa of Avila, teach me how to pray. So I can truly pray with the Father with the intimacy that you prayed, because most of us may struggle, like, how do I pray? Well,
mm-hmm.
he's your Father.
Yeah.
And so you can have that deep relationship. So learning from them is very, very important. So seeing, and now it seems like heaven it's like a society or something like that. And coming
yeah.
from Uganda
mm-hmm.
and comparing the culture in the West and in, mm-hmm. in Africa, to me, it's easier to understand the society and the dynamics of the society. Like, there's a hierarchy. You honor the elders, and it's like, you know, you honor the saints because they have shown mm-hmm. how to live that life of excellence in God, how they surrender their will to God. Because ultimately, yeah. Jesus says, not everybody that says, Lord, Lord, will enter heaven, but only he who does the will of my Father.
Right.
So seeing how they truly surrendered their will, and that's our biggest battle in life, is surrendering to God.
Right.
And even Jesus was God, but he surrendered his will to God. So
right.
why
he
shouldn't
showed
we?
Us the way, yeah.
yeah. So why shouldn't we surrender our will as well? So looking at them and seeing that the way they did it really shows us how we need to live
yeah.
our faith. So I'm saying, like, if we go to heaven, we'll see Thomas Aquinas. Like, I honor you for the work you did
mm-hmm.
in living such amazing theological or philosophical text, I don't know which
yeah,
one it
yeah.
is, looking at St. Paul, I honor you for the fight, you know,
mm-hmm.
and it's true. I honor you for the work you do.
Right.
And so coming from a culture like in Africa, we understand what that means, honoring somebody's work. In a Western culture, there's a lot of resistance to that. I published a children's book, and somebody said, what are you talking about obedience in the children's book? Like, this is the problem we have in the culture. And I'm like, no, the problem is not obedience. The problem is, what are you obedient to? Mm. So if you're honoring, like, there's nothing wrong with honor. If, like, I think they say virtue signals, honor signals virtue. Is that what it is? Or honor, virtue signals? One signals the other. Mm. I think honor signals
virtue. That would make
honor
sense.
Honor signals virtue. So if I'm honoring you, it's signaling some kind of virtue.
You're recognizing something good, and ultimately all that good comes from God.
Exactly. Right. So if I'm honoring Thomas Aquinas, I recognize the good that he has.
Right.
And so so it's right that we should honor each other in the excellence of doing God's work.
Yeah. Well, let's take a break there, and we'll come back, and we have many wonderful things to talk about here. We'll come back, and we'll hear a little bit more of the fallout of that study, you know, how that changed your life and what happened after that, and then we'll dig into some more of these topics that we've got into. So we'll be back in just a couple minutes to hear the rest of Monica's story. I want to remind you, if you go to chnetwork.org, we have lots of stories written as well as videos. There's also a video that Monica was on previously with us, a Ripple Effects video. You can check that out at chnetwork.org/presents to see the video with Monica. We'll be back in just a couple minutes to hear the rest of our story. See you then. Welcome back to the Journey Home program. We're entering the second half of our hour tonight, speaking with Monica Anyango. She's a revert to the Catholic faith and creator of the Life of Purpose Planner. Simplicityandproductivity.com is the website for that. We're going to talk more about it in a little bit. But when we left off, Monica, you know, you've had these experiences. You had your daughter. You're asking big questions. You had this experience of God kind of sending you a sign, moving you to re-explore your Catholic faith, and you dug into the history and you were discovering the saints. So let's pick up there. What happened as a result of that study, that exploration, what happened in your life?
Yeah, so I think the big transformation was saying yes to God the Father. And I think I said yes to God the Father at that moment when he showed me the sign. In my subconscious, I was saying yes to God the Father when I look back. So I went to confession. Like I said, it broke. I could feel literally like everything would make sense.
Yeah.
I think, and I have looked back and I say, when we are in a state of sin, our intellect is darkened.
Yeah.
And we are logical beings. You know, that's why we are made in the image of God. We have an intellect. And so sin darkens our intellect. So we're not able to exercise our logic, and we're not able to exercise reason when coming to choose something or do anything. And it's like, that was the proof, like, that I needed, looking back, that my intellect was now opened. The light of God, my logic and my reason was now being exercised, and I'm able to exercise and choose the right thing. I listened to a talk where they were talking about how the intellect influences the will. So if we're not in a state of grace, our intellect is darkened, and then that bends our will, and we ultimately we want to submit our will to God, but that would force us to not submit our will to God. So looking at that, it really dawned on me the importance of confession and the sacraments. And nobody told me to go to Holy Communion or anything. Mm-hmm. I just started going, and now I go to daily Mass, and nobody told me that. So it's from this deep desire reading. Mm-hmm. You can't love what you don't know. And I think probably God gave me the grace to begin wanting to read and learn more. And also at that time, I was looking for a spiritual director, and I also was seeking deeper prayer, like contemplation. Mm. And so I was looking for a spiritual director, and I went to this parish, and I approached the priest, and he was very gracious. He's now my parish priest. And I was explaining to him what had happened in my life. I was like, this happened. I don't know what's going on. You know, I love fashion. I love the stood things. Is this where I give up everything and I go and start walking on the street as a Franciscan? And I said, you know, I think I'm called to be a nun, and I'm going to be a Carmelite, a cloistered Carmelite. And he's like, no, you're not called to be a cloistered Carmelite. You're called to be a mother. And I was like, oh, yeah, I have a baby. You know, you're called to live in the world. And I was like, oh, at that moment, I wasn't thinking. But all this were the struggles that I was having inside of myself, trying to figure out, why am I having this interior disturbance? And I couldn't, even my mother couldn't answer them. So it was the priest, and he gave me reassurance. He's like, no, what you're experiencing is called the first grace. When you go through a conversion, a mm-hmm. spiritual conversion, the Lord gives you this fervor. So you have all this grace. And that's why you feel like you want to do those things. But, you know, no, you're a mother. You're called, maybe you're being called to a deeper prayer life. I was thinking I was called to be Teresa of Avila. I'm like, maybe the nuns have a somewhere where the babies can stay and I can go pray. And it's like, no. You're called to be in the world and be a mother. And also I had entrepreneur endeavors. I've always had this entrepreneurship brag. And it's like, oh, I don't think I'm called to be an entrepreneur. It's like, no, you are called to be an entrepreneur because you have the desire for that. And also that there's a greater good in your entrepreneurial activities. So you should explore that more. So I was like, okay. And so then I was like, okay, so do I give up my love for certain things? And he's like, or even fashion. He's like, no. You can enjoy those things as long as you're not attached to those things. So it gave me so much peace. And I was like, okay. And also I needed, I was drawn into deeper prayer. And I went, that time I went to the mass because I was telling my friend, I'm seeking something deep, but I don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, have you gone to through the Mass? So it's the Latin rite. Mm-hmm. And it's, have you gone to the Mass? And I was like, no. So I went to the Mass and the priest was at the altar and there were like 10 altar servers and there was the choir and the choir laughed and they sing Gregorian chant. I'm part of the choir now. And there's Renaissance classical music as well. They sing all of that, Sebastian Bach and Mozart and all of that. And I was like, I thought I had died and gone to heaven between the incense and the priests in the regal robes and all the altar servers. And the Mass was just so somber and the confession line. And I kept on, when I went back home, I kept on waking up. I'm like, I think I'm dead. I think I'm dead. I'm at my judgment. I have met God. And I kept on waking up like, I think I'm dead because I think my heart truly craved like a deeper prayer life. So that's where I found that the deeper contemplation, it gave me the place that I needed to really go deeper. And also I needed a spiritual director and the priest gave me the direction that I need. And I had the peace. So I'm like, okay, I'm on the right path. So then I just had peace in my situation. And I started, because I was like, I had years of experience in a trauma hospital. I couldn't work at that moment. And I was like, why can't I get a job? I have this experience and everything was taken away from me. Everything was taken away. And I was like, why is everything taken away? But now looking back, I think the Lord allowed me to be in that time, like a desert, to detach me from all these things. But also I was reading a lot and I would wake up, sleep at like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. My mom was like, you're reading all night. And I was just ferociously reading history and the Old Testament and all. I just loved it. I couldn't like go to sleep because it's like I said, you can't love what you don't know. And I just enjoyed it. Maybe it was the grace God gave me at that moment to just enjoy reading all this stuff. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is so, so beautiful. Where has this stuff been all my life? Yeah. And I couldn't like stop reading and podcasts and YouTube and all these different things, just taking in Coming Home Network. And what are the objections? What were they saying? Who experienced this? And so all these different things just really helped me kind of grow. But at that time, after 2 years, I was with my daughter at home. And I think the Lord wanted me to be home. I'm a single mother and the Lord wanted me to be home with my daughter. And now going back, and I think also it was a time for formation for me looking back, because I used to work in the trauma hospital. It was just like, okay, you know, the time of death is this. But going back, you'd see, I think one of the priests said, like, if you want to see human suffering, you go to a confessional or go to a hospital bed. Mm. And I would see, I grew up in a war in Uganda, in the middle of the war. I remember in our boarding school, the rebels came to attack us and the nuns took us and hid us in a room, you know, in a convent in the room, because we are from a certain tribe that the government was against. And I have never been traumatized working in America or living in America. I do feel like in Africa, the people are simple and happy. They don't have too much, but they enjoy life. Even in the war, when we faced the war, we would wake up in the morning. You don't know if you're going to make it. You didn't even know if there's death. You know, you just wake up and you make the day and you don't know if you're going to wake up the next morning. And so it was such a very simple life. And I come here in the hospital, you know, I have seen, I think Mother Teresa had a quote where she's saying that there's a poverty of the soul in America versus, you know, on media, they portray the poverty of Africa, the material poverty.
Right.
But I think the material external poverty, it's a form of suffering that really simplifies our heart and helps us really live in simplicity. Versus in the West, we have excess. Mm-hmm. There's excess of everything, but people are so miserable.
Right.
And it's they want more and want more, but they don't have God. So it was just like I tell people, I've been traumatized living in the West than growing up in a war in Uganda, where we woke up, the buildings were bombed, there were dead bodies on the street. And seeing all these things never traumatized me than seeing the, like working in a ER here in America, like seeing the human suffering and a lot of depression, a lot of suicide, and even a lot of physical problems come from a virtue. Like, for example, even, you know, diabetes, for example, you know, in the spiritual life, you temper, you know,
temper,
and your body is a temple of God. And so if you take time to eat the right foods and you're able to grow in virtue, but also you're taking care of the body as the temple of God. Or why are you having anxiety and chest pain? So I saw a lot of things were manifesting. I'm not saying all the time, but most of the time, the physical illnesses were manifesting from something deeper. Or somebody's coming in anxiety, a chest pain, or somebody, my wife told me she's divorcing, or something, like something may be happening, like a traumatic experience, and it's manifesting itself as chest pain, and they run the test and everything is negative, and you're telling the person, okay, you're discharged, but the person's like, well, I have chest pain, and what am I going to do, and where are the meds, you know?
Yeah.
So seeing that, and just seeing a lot of people, like 99.9% were baptized Catholic, and they were not living their life, a Catholic life, or maybe they were contracepting. They're like, well, I'm happy, but I'm like, are you really happy? Mm. Or you're living with somebody you're not married to? Or, you know, even I met a girl, she says, oh yeah, I teach catechism, but yeah, they're consummating the relationship. It's like, okay, it's a double standard. It's like, yeah, but abortion is okay. It's like, no, you know. So there was all these different things coming, and people are coming to the hospital with these problems. But when you dig deeper, it was the spiritual problem. Even a girl came, like, saying, like, the angels told her she needed to put a cross on her head, on her, over her bed. And the people are like, no, she's crazy. But, you know, I'm not a psychiatrist to say that. But anyway. Yeah.
Well, it's all more interconnected than people think. Right,
right, yeah, because we are body, mind, and soul. Mm-hmm. And so I think what's happening more, we see the body is detached from our mind and our soul.
Disintegration.
Yeah, the disintegration. And yeah, it's very important to see the person as a whole and treating the whole human being than just isolating and focusing like, okay, it's chest pain, but why are you having the chest pain?
Right.
That is the crisis that we're having now. And you see a lot of brokenness in the world, a lot of young people, a lot of the rates of mental illness. Mm-hmm. I actually went to a public library, and they had a bag saying, like, here's a mental health crisis bag for teens. Mm. And it's like, you know, this is what the culture is offering at the moment, but the solution is God. Only God, I think St. Augustine said, Lord, you made us for yourself. And our soul remains restless until it rests in this. The only happiness, the only fulfillment that we'll have is in our identity as sons and daughters of God. Even as baptized Catholics, sometimes we don't know what it truly means. I didn't know what it meant to be Catholic. I was I was somebody like, oh yeah, it's kind of like a Gucci label or something like, yeah, I'm Catholic. But, and a lot of that, but it's like, are you truly Catholic? Even, even now, you ask people, do you have a relationship with the Father? It's like, no. Like, what are you talking about? I'm praying my rosary. How many scapulars do I need to wear? But do you really truly have a relationship with the Father? Because he's your Father.
Yeah.
And if you do, you know, like, you don't have to be caught in the rubrics, like, oh, how many rosaries do I need to do? But it's an intimate relationship with the Father.
All that stuff is for.
Right. Yeah. It's there to help build the foundation that we need. And then after, when we are in that relationship, like the saints are, we are able to you know, have more intimacy with God in that way. So I feel like the crisis we're having now in the culture is a lack of a true relationship with God.
Yeah.
And even as Catholics, not knowing who we are, what is our identity, what is our heritage, like what is God calling us to do in the world?
Yeah. Well, we have about 10 minutes left. And so let's bring us up to date on, you know, so you God drew you back to the faith and showed you all these beautiful things. And you also, from your experience there in the ER, you really had a sense, you had a heart for the disintegration we see in society, but also even amongst Catholics, not their faith, not quite connecting with the journey that God's calling them on for healing and for purpose and for transformation. So tell us what happened to you. Bring us up to the present. How did you get now into this work, this planner, the work that you're doing now? Tell us about all that.
Yeah, so through that process, you know, I got the desire to want to do to go to Mass. So I was going to daily Mass. I'm a single mother. I homeschool my daughter. Mm-hmm. And I was feeling, and I work full time as well. But God would inspire me to do these things. Like, for example, I wrote the children's book because I just couldn't find something that I could read to my child. Mm-hmm. And remembering the stories of how we grew up in Uganda, stories were told with the goal of passing on some moral value. Mm-hmm. It was just not a frivolous story that was being told. So I was like, what is the kind of story I would want to write for my daughter? So that's how I wrote my first children's book. But also I was coming to daily Mass and I was feeling anxious. And I'm like, if I'm coming to Mass daily and it's a good thing, why am I feeling anxious? So I started asking my mom again, like, what do I do? She's like, look at the monks and they have structure and they are considered the most productive. So I was like, okay. So that's how I started researching. And so combining my experience in the ER, looking at the rates of like the mental health crisis from a lack of identity, a lack of purpose, because God has sent us here for something. If our Catholic faith was just about like, oh, I'll just check the boxes and I'll just put my dip in the holy water and go home and go on with my life. And it's like, this is my Catholic life and this is my worldly life. Then what's the meaning of life? Again, that question comes in. So it's like, how can we integrate? We are called to be the salt to the world. And all of us have unique things that we are called to glorify God. And how are we building that courage, that diligence, that discipline to be the change that we want to see in the world? Like, it's very easy to say, oh, no, that person will change it. Or, you know, someone else will host the program. But who will host the program if you don't host the program? Mm-hmm. And that's how we can change the world. You know, we can't change the world by running away from the culture, but truly harnessing what God has given us and being the change that we want to see in the world. So that's what it came from, that. And I think that was the journey God was bringing me.
Yeah.
Into my mission, which is involved with Simplicity and Productivity and other projects that I'm doing in helping people truly realize their excellence and how God is calling them to change whatever they are. Maybe it's, I have a friend who does flowers and she does flowers like nobody else does them. But in that, somebody sees that beauty and they are drawn to God in that. So in whichever unique way we are being called to glorify God, we won't find happiness unless we do that thing that God has called us to do. And he says, not everybody that calls me says, Lord, Lord, will enter heaven, but he who does the will of my Father. And many times we are fighting it. Like you could fight being here and you could say, no, I don't want to do that. But it's like, no, is this the will of the Father for you? Yes, right. Because it's changing lives. It's the greater good. And we need somebody to tell the story. So it requires a lot of courage. And so through Simplicity, that's why it's a life of purpose. I needed to figure out how I can manage my time so I can live in a place of freedom and do the things that God is calling me to do. Most important, be a good mother, be a good daughter of God, and live out my faith well in the world, in my workplace, or through other activities that God has called me to do. But also, how can I walk with people on this journey, taking my experiences to help them find themselves? Because like I said, there's that we have a crisis inside and outside of the church. In the church, people are just checking boxes. But it's like your life is more beautiful. You're called to flourish. I think it's virtue. We are called to human flourishing.
Yes.
And we are called to the supernatural life. But that is our path to sanctity. And it's going to require virtue. And it's going to require, you know, dying to ourself and self-gifting. But I could tell myself a million reasons. I don't like the camera. But it's like, this is what God is calling me to do in obedience to that, because that is the will of God. I have to die to myself and say, if my story is going to help somebody else, then blessed be God. Mm-hmm. And instead of, you know, being protective about, oh, what are people going to think or this, it's like, for the sake of God, I will do this. And my priest always says to me, do it for the love of God. So in obedience to God, because Jesus says, nobody that I do what the Father wills. So is this the will of God? And if this is the will of God, how can I build the courage? And it's like, we're not going to get holy. Like I hear a lot of Catholics saying, I want to be a saint. I want to be a saint. Mm-hmm. But how are you going to be a saint? A saint is self-gifting, is self-sacrifice. And how are you building that virtue or taking the courage to grow to be that saint that you are called to be? It's not going to happen.
Right.
And so the saints are showing us what truly self-gifting is, what the supernatural life is. And God has used those people to even bring not only honor to them, but even glory. I looked at St. Peter's grave and I was like, that must be the most beautiful grave I've ever seen in the world. But he truly gave everything for the kingdom. Mm-hmm. And it's like God is calling us to contribute to this economy. Like we are running away from the culture, but how can we put back? But it's seeing from all the brokenness, seeing in the hospital and also on my journey and taking my own reflection and understanding, our life is more than just the rubrics. We need to transform our interior to be the people that God has called us to be. But it requires a lot of self-sacrifice, a lot of death to ourselves to be those people that honor God. Because everybody can say, I'm going to be saved. But Jesus says, only he that does the will of the Father. Have we taken the time to discern what the will of the Father is? You could say, oh, yeah, like, okay, I've discerned my vocation. But there's something more than your vocation. Mm-hmm. How is God calling you to be in whatever, like I said, the flowers, whatever, that is the will of God, because he's given you a gift for flowers. In it, you're glorifying God. You know, a rose is a rose, a sunflower is a sunflower. So you have your unique way that God has called you to bring greater glory. But the holiness is not going to come without that investment in virtue and doing the inner work of transforming. Like being a Catholic entrepreneur, it's there's a lot of challenges you have to face. But it's, you know, from, you know, ideation and building a product. And it's like, why am I doing this? And sometimes you think like, oh, God, you're so, you're God. And can I get, you know, a break here? And it's like, no, in doing those things, in having the courage to speak, you are growing in virtue. Like the Lord is not going to come and give you courage.
Yeah.
You're going to have to be able to have the confidence and trust and abandonment to be that person.
Yeah. Sometimes we want to compartmentalize those things. Like we go, I can have my prayer life over here, and then I have my vocation and my work, and then maybe God's called me to a mission. But it's all the same thing. When we when we ask that question, like, I want to be holy, I want to be a saint, I want to do God's will. Well, you have to start with what he's actually given you.
Right?
That you're to go deeper in that. And I think one of the great gifts we have through the church is getting the order right of those things. And it's mirrored in your story. I mean, it begins with prayer. Prayer is that relationship with God. That's what it says in the catechism. Prayer is the relationship with God. It's not the means to the relationship. Prayer is the relationship. And when we enter into that relationship, God calls us to conversion, to virtue, right? To change, to grow, to make different decisions. And then as a result of that, then he gives us mission. He gives us vocation. He calls us to do things. And so, that's part of the gift we have from the church is the order. And we see that in the lives of the saints too.
Right. Yeah. And also one thing I wanted to speak to is the mercy and the beauty of the church as a mother, as a single mother in the Catholic Church. I've had people say like, oh, I'm a mother and a single mother, and the church ostracizes single mothers. Mm. It's like, that's not true. Mm. That is a perception but the church, nowhere in a text does it say you're ostracized because of your sin. Mm. God is calling us to a life, and he knows what's going to make us happy. If we are attached to sin, then that is not that the church is ostracizing. We have chosen to live that way for our own sake. But to me, it's like it's God's mercy calling me, you know, St. Paul's story. Like, who am I that God's grace could give me a chance and call me into this life that I'm not worthy of, that I had no idea? And that goes to show his redemption, his mercy, and looking back and seeing, wow, God, you loved me. Like, he pursued you, like, even in our brokenness, he pursued us. So it's up to us to say that yes. And like I said, I said yes to Christ in the door, but I said yes to the Blessed Mother. Well, I didn't mention that. I said yes to the Blessed Mother when I went. I think that they had a Lady of Fatima going around in different homes.
Obstetry,
and I feel like that's, a statue. And I think that's when I said yes to the Blessed Mother. So, and now coming into the communion of saints and to the family of God, it's so beautiful to see the church triumphant, you know, the church suffering, and, you know, what's the church?
Militant, that's
The church militant, and seeing all of it coming together. So it's just so beautiful to be invited into this beauty. And it's like, we are all being called to the table, and it's up to us to say yes, and to say yes to God. And that's where we'll find true happiness and fulfillment.
I'm glad you brought that point, you know, that, again, the church is there to communicate God's love and God's mercy, and individual Catholics, mea culpa, we don't always do a good job of communicating that mercy, but that's the reality, you know, that God, he's that loving father in the story of the prodigal son. He just wants you to come home to him. He loves you no matter what you've been through, no matter the mistakes you've made. He loves you, and he still has a plan for you. Nothing that you have done has surprised God. From all eternity, he's seen it, and he loves you even now, and he has a plan for you. The journey will continue.
And that's the beauty of my story. That, wow, even I never did what I could do now. And in the 3-4 years, well, my conversion has been 7 years. But in the 3-4 years, the Lord has done more things than I could ever dream of in my life. And it's just so amazing to see the kind of life that he's inviting to for us to live as children of God. So our daughtership, our sonship. So, it's just so beautiful.
Well, we have just a few seconds left. What's the your website? What will they find there if they want to check out more?
Yeah, so we do have Simplicity and Productivity, where we have the planner that is going to design to help you habituate virtue, choosing how we use our time, how we steward our talents, and all these different things, because that's most important as Catholics, but also Princeton Publications, where I'm showcasing my children's books as well. Cool. And they're allegories, but the whole idea is about transforming character to be the people that God has called us to be.
Beautiful. Okay, well, we have those links up there, so check them out. Thanks so much, Monica, for sharing your story.
Thank you so much for having me.
And for your good work. We'll be praying for you as it continues.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for being here for this episode of the Journey Home program. I pray that Monica's story is an inspiration to you. Again, her website is simplicityandproductivity.com. Definitely check that out. And hey, come back next week. We're going to continue the journey here, sharing the stories of the ways that God draws us to himself, the way that he heals us, he draws us into prayer, and he sends us out on mission. You too are on a journey. Never forget that. We'll be back in next week. Until then, God bless.